All right, welcome back, everybody. Third and final hour of KDK Radio Midday, then Mangino. Quick catch-up. We've been talking about sports betting starting today at the Rivers, doing some testing, and it'll be ready to go over the weekend. Talked about that from a lot of different angles, the bet that is being made there by the Rivers, people that finance and so forth, and whether that's something that ultimately will work or not. And calls were plentiful, and we welcome those to continue. There's some downsides to it. There's some positives to it. Most prominently, the idea that there's an audience 8 to 10 days a year that would love to go there potentially and bet, or a large number or a certain portion of them, on the other hand. And in fact, that, you know, you've got a natural crew that's already there. You've got young poker players that are already there. They'll extend their hand to that. You've got fantasy sports, things of that sort. On the other hand, a lot of people have their own guy. It's very local. You may get a better return from your guy. For that matter, it requires change. If, in fact, this would really work, it needs new faces, not recycled faces, and it needs people that will do it on a more regular basis than 8 to 10 days a year. So we've thrown that out, and once again, whether there is a public or social policy associated with that, or what have you, and I don't particularly care one way or the other. But the reality is that there are a lot of people that will be lining up to do it, and so that's something we've talked about. The mystery of Pittsburgh gets outlined in pewtrust.org, and to boil that one down, it basically takes a look at cities such as Pittsburgh that have had decreased populations, significant population loss, and yet a significant rise in income per capita. For instance, the income per capita 2017 is about 54,000 people in that space. I'm not comparing it to places that have had huge population increases. I'm not validating and hopeful of and not understanding the long-term concern about losing population. That I get all that. But this is all about whether or not cities can, if they play their assets right, have fewer people who make more money. And Pittsburgh fits in that category. The change in per capita income 2000 to 2017 is 24% positive. 54,000 a year. STEM, Pittsburgh has more STEM jobs than any of the shrinking cities that they analyzed. About 80,000 or 7% of all jobs. Lynn from Squirrel Hill, my nephew does IT at CMU, and I have a friend who works for a huge law firm. He works out of Pittsburgh for a huge large firm located elsewhere. He does their IT. IT is a big part of it. I have posited the idea that, okay, you have this idea that there's a number of assets in the community, the eds, the meds, the colleges, the healthcare, the energy, things of that sort, and we've given given opportunities there, and it's bringing in higher jobs, albeit to fewer people. And so therefore, to a certain extent, you want to cater or work with those people because they're helping right now. Long term, you lose enough people, you got a problem. Second of all, Scott Peterson. His name is probably familiar to you, but probably not for the reasons that you think I'm going to go to. Scott Peterson is not that murderer that lived out in San Francisco, murdered his wife and unborn baby, and, you know, HLN back in the day covered it every single night. Scott Peterson was the only armed deputy stationed at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School the day that the deadly rampage went on. And he, through his attorney, asked a judge on Wednesday to find that he had no legal duty, yesterday, to protect the students and faculty from harm. The judge rejected the argument. He wanted a judge to dismiss a lawsuit filed by the family of one of the 17 people shot and killed. Now, I've made a lot of arguments here in court, wherever. Attorney says, we want to say he had an obligation, but the law isn't that. From a legal standpoint, there was no duty. Judge saw it differently, finding that Peterson had a duty to the school community as someone whose job was security and who had an obligation to act reasonably under the circumstances. Judge also said that Peterson wasn't protected from the lawsuit by sovereign immunity, which is a legal document, doctrine. So now we're going to have an appeal. One of the lawyers representing the victim says, it is inconceivable that anyone could advance the proposition that Scott Peterson had no duty to these people. That is an absurd proposition. This was an abdication of responsibility when the shooting happened, and it's an abdication of responsibility now in this courtroom. So, the duty part is for real. Duty could come from common law, could come from statute. It could come from your job responsibilities. Duty is what a lot of this turns on. Remember yesterday we talked a bit about the lawsuit filed on behalf of the parents for Antoine Rose, University of Pittsburgh, and there was that question about, you know, effectively what duty Pitt has or had with respect to Michael Rosenfeld. Rosfeld. And we went through that with Eric Chafin, and the bottom line is that there's got to be a duty, and then even if there is a duty, there becomes a issue about privacy and things of that sort. Duty is what turns a lot of these cases. I have not seen specifically the law that this individual, this lawyer, presented, and it might seem in some respects to be irresponsible, but if you're representing a client, it's not. Even under circumstances like this, it's just not a winner. I'm Ellis Cannon. Remember, everybody, you want to get that Make America Great Again Santa hat, shop.donaldtrump.com. You have to order by December 18th. It's nifty. Looks like, you know, the type of thing Santa would wear with the words, Make America Great Again. Now that I've put it on blast, I'm going to be personally hurt and disappointed if I don't see hundreds and, well, maybe even thousands of them as I walk around the area. All right, I got to get to this. Global spending on paper towels for use at home added up to about $12 billion in 2017. Americans accounted for almost half of that, $5.7 billion. In other words, the United States spends nearly as much on paper towels as every other country in the world combined. This is a market research firm report called Euromonitor International that comes way of the Atlantic. Now, the United States, of course, has the highest population on the list. France, UK, Germany, Italy. But we stand apart on a per capita basis as well. In 2017, the average American, you, me, Mia, everybody else out there, spent $17.50 on paper towels. Closest that anybody comes to that is Norway at $11.70. So there is a representative, the company's head of research, Svetlana Yudoslavaya, and that's actually her name, said that we love tissue products. A strong economy can support more spending on non-essentials like paper towels and purchases of high-quality products. Okay, Svetlana, let me be clear. paper towels are essential. They're not non-essential. There is something called the Good Housekeeping Institute, an institute, which is quoted as saying they are convenient, they are absorbent, they are especially helpful in cleaning messes where something like cross-contamination could be an issue. I definitely think that in many ways they represent how Americans think and that people are obsessed with instant gratification. Okay, that woman's thinking a little bit too deeply into this. The fact of the matter is we are addicted to the paper towel. We love the paper towel. We don't go a week without paper towels, and rightfully so. I love paper towels. And I'm glad I'm not in one of the 60 countries that Nielsen looked at in 2016 that said, in those countries, the most commonly used tools were brooms, mops, and rags. It's 2018-19, baby. We're not doing rags, man. No. Get with it, 60 countries. See, when I read that we're so far ahead of the rest of the world, I'm not so sure we need to be great again that we're already great. So I don't know if I should get the Santa hat. Uh-oh. Here's something to consider. We're not only using them, we're throwing them away too. According to the EPA in 2015, the country generated about 7.4 billion pounds of waste consisting of paper towels and other tissue materials like toilet paper. Generally speaking, anything disposable isn't good for the environment, especially something that is used on a large societal scale. This comes from a mechanical engineering professor at the University of Michigan at Flint, who has somehow been allowed to study the environmental impacts of paper towels. Now, that did it. Now that I read that, put me down for a half a dozen Santa hats, because we truly do need to make America great again. You know, I can't make this stuff up. The most bizarre, oddball, who's on first, alternative universe, strange, and Twilight Zone week that I've had here since April is rolling along. So I have this unnamed some guy, MAGA Hatch, you just lost a listener. You don't get that that was a play? I mean, dear Lord. I mean, my body of work suggests that I definitely am going to get a whole bunch of those. So there you have somebody way out, presumably on the left, who just, there's no humor. I mean, it's been like this. This has been really, really nuts. Hey, Alice. Thank you. Fran in North Hills. This is Fran from the North Hills. Just a guess, but is Santa hats made in China? Cross my mind. Lynn from Squirrel Hill. Columbine changed the rules. Police used to wait till SWAT. Now it's their duty to go in. Our brave Pittsburgh police went into Tree of Life to protect and serve before the SWAT team got there. Touche. Make the argument as an attorney. Don't expect to win it. I'm Ellis Cannon. We'll be back for more Strange Talk on KDK Radio. Welcome back to KDK Radio Midday. Ellis Cannon. RJ in Munhall writes, boy, I think Jerry and I have issues. Ha ha. You love paper towels? I love my wife, cats, donuts, pizza, and ice cream. RJ Munhall, laugh out loud. No Trump hats ever. So the Trump Santa Claus hat has sparked all type of controversy, a high level of silliness, and a tremendous amount of confusion. Shop DonaldTrump.com if you want your Santa hat, make America great again. All right, I got to get to Vince. I got to get to Sam. Also, I have an email here from a woman, I think it's Mary, who says that on the Dollar Bank Instant Access, which you could, of course, do at kdkradio.com, that she picked up her Narcan supply for use, I believe, in a school, but they can't get an EpiPen for purposes of helping with bee stings, and that this is nuts, and she's going to put it on blast with politicians and would like to see us discuss that. So we've written that down. I've written that down as something to investigate. All right, we're going to the top of the hour. Vince Hopewell, Ellis Cannon, welcome to the show. You're on campaign finance law. What's up with that?
I'm calling in regard to these allegations against President Trump. How many Americans are aware that there is a $17 million slush fund sitting for congressmen who are accused of sexual abuse or sexual harassment?
I don't know how many, but it came to light about 18 months ago.
Mm-hmm. How many cases have been tried since 1995?
Very few, if any.
268. And that's out of taxpayers' money, not out of Trump's money.
Oh, okay. I'm confused. Okay. Mm-hmm. No. I understand what you're saying. Okay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Really delighted me on, when was it, Monday, when Trump lured Pelosi and Schumer into the White House and carved them up like a Thanksgiving turkey. Did you see Schumer squirming there? He didn't even have his little glasses on, his little condescending look with his glasses down on his nose. Pelosi goes in there and says, my house is going to have transparency. And about 5 minutes into it, we should be conducting this conversation in private. And Trump responds, no, we want transparency. Egg all over her face. Well, you know why they want to conduct it in private? So they can go out and give a spin to their lapdog media biased buffoons.
Well, let me say this, Vince. Number one, yeah, he played them. He ambushed them. And in the short term, he, you know, won, so to speak. I have no problem with that stuff being out publicly. The only thing I would suggest, he also put his own party a bit in the box, because I don't think you're going to find widespread support by the Republicans for his position, or at least the idea that they want to take ownership for shutting down the government.
Well, for one thing, the government is fully funded through the year 2019. And number two, a shutdown only affects 15 to 20% of the government.
Yeah, but
this
15,
is another thing people are totally ignorant about.
Well, they don't maybe know exact numbers, but the reality is the 15 to 20% represent human beings who, you know.
No, it represents agencies like the EPA sending projects up to Mars. That's the kind of things it affects. It affects no Social Security checks. It affects no unemployment. It affects none of these welfare bums.
Did you say bums?
Yeah, exactly.
Why are they?
What would you call them?
Recipients.
Recipients, yeah. Recipients paid.
Vince, why are you so angry?
Because you people are totally biased. Let me tell you something.
What about my people? What have I said? I mean, what have I said that triggered you?
You're making sarcastic remarks about this Trump Make America Santa Claus hat. You know what? You said America was great before. We don't have people walking down the street now saying, what do we want? Dead cops. When do we want them? Now.
Vince, I think you need to chill a little bit, okay?
Let me give you one more point. When Pelosi says they can only give him $1.6 billion for the wall, who dumped $150 billion in cash on the runways of the mullahs of Iran?
We need to adjourn there. That's the second time this week we've turned a wall conversation into the Iran payment that we read in detail on the air from Politichek. That dude was angry. Yeah, the Santa Claus thing was a joke. Okay, it's real. You could buy it. Wow. This is the weirdest week ever. It's the weirdest week ever. It's just weird. It's Weird Week 2018. Susan in Greensburg, do you have anything?
Yes. Hi, Ellis. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you so much.
I just wanted to mention, and it had to do with the Santa Claus hat, but on a more serious basis, that I'm a Stephen Colbert watcher at 11:30 at night, and they've been advertising a book that's flying off the shelves, and it's called Whose Boat Is This Boat? And it's only around $11 with tax and everything, and people can probably get it cheaper on Amazon if it's even available, because I've been trying and trying, and it's telling all the stupid things that Trump has said. And the good news is it goes, you know, when you buy it, I think it's a good sign people are buying it, and the amount goes to charity. So it's called Whose Boat Is This Boat? Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't, but I'm glad that you reported it and told me about it. Trust me.
Okay, because I assume it's paperback, but I've been trying to get it. At first, I went before it was even out on the shelves, and now they won't reserve it for you at Barnes & Noble, and it's just, I guess, they can't keep it on the shelf.
Hey, when you were on hold, Susan, did you hear that guy from Hopewell talk about dead cops in the street or something? Did anybody know what that was all about?
No, and... No. I'm glad I didn't hear him, but I don't know what it's about. But maybe if I hang up and somebody can call in that knows.
Yeah, know? That would go a long way. So, yeah, there's this slush fund that basically is in place that pays off these sexual advances and indiscretions and things of that sort. And I remember when the warden first heard it, she went out of her mind, found that completely reprehensible. I understand all that. But how we went from there, and then we get to Iran again. Oh, my God. Sam Shaler, Ellis Cannon, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. I'm calling about this article, front page today, Startup Will Build Modular Homes, Affordable. They call them affordable housing.
Yes, sir.
Did you look into that? I mean, have you read that yet?
Is that the Post Gazette?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah,
it's the only paper we have.
Yeah, I understand. No, I saw it, and I decided to not make a topic out of it today.
You would what?
I saw it, but I just didn't want to make a topic out of it today.
Well, it should be, because it's absolute crap, and it's a slap in the face to wherever these people go, and forcing people to call it affordable housing at $395,000 a copy.
Mm.
I wouldn't call that affordable.
Yeah.
It would be in California.
Hey.
But then they're going to build another one at $184,000.
Now they're talking. Now they're talking, Sammy. Let's go out and see what Scott has to say. When we somehow were talking about the border wall, and I asked TJ in response, whatever happened to Mexico paying for it? And he went off like the guy in Hopewell did, who just like lost it and went into the payment to Iran. That was the response. That was what I got back. I probably should have known then. I mean, even earlier today, the guy called and said he found TJ, and for that matter, Anthony, and also, who was the third one? Oh, Bishop. They're setups. I rarely hear from them, but they're setups. I must set it up. Well, this will make your heart happy. This comes from Fred, at least puts his name on it, MAGA. Moscow agent governing America. I guess that makes me bad because I read it, right? Cynthia, you want to talk about the Iran money, of course.
Yeah, I heard that guy earlier. I don't know if it's the same guy, but I heard this conversation earlier in the week. And I thought, you know, it steamed to me. And I thought, I'm not calling. And then I hear it again. So now I'm calling. The people that are complaining about Iran's money, well, number one, I think they're reading from the neoconservative Pentagon playbook, wanting to start another war. That was their money. It was frozen.
I don't know that they got interest. I went to Politicheck. I read almost 2.5 pages on live radio about the $150 billion and the $1.8 billion. There's some truth, there's some false, but the reality is that you hit it on the head. And this, it's like we wrote a check.
I don't understand how people were this ignorant.
Okay.
And I want to add something. People need to read a book called Killing Hope. And we lost a man earlier in the week named William Bloom. He used to work for the State Department. He talked about the things we have done to overturn other governments. Iran is an example of that. We need to leave these people alone. And so this is how we created enemies. So,
well, you know, Iran is, you know, we have to look at them, I think, for what they're worth, Cynthia. I think that quite candidly they have Western interests within that country that would welcome commercialization and Western investment. I think that having talked to people who are from Iran, that they have enough background in that to be informed and educated when they tell me that. I've talked to academics. On the flip side, you've got some people up top who are skimming and scamming, and they create tremendous havoc in the region by what they say, if not by what they do.
Well, how is that any different from what happens from country to country? The rich skim and scam, and the people like the yellow vest protesters in France.
Yeah, but once we start to put religion to it, you know what happens then.
Oh, of course. And any extremism is bad. I don't care where it is.
Cynthia, thank you so much. It's always good to hear from you.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Mike in Wexford, Ellis Cannon.
Ellis, Merry Christmas to you.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
And your listeners, and I'll be very brief.
No, take your time, believe me. Well, you're a
good friend of mine sent me some videos recently. Some of them were from the Reagan debates. Some of them were from George Bush. Some of them were from President Obama. And I'm convinced that the lunacy and craziness has always existed. It's just that social media and talk radio have brought it to the forefront.
Yeah, but let's be real, Mike. When we started and I've been wondering where you've been. You always say, hi, counselor. When you and I first start talking, and I was out there, you know, doing whatever I was doing, and you called, and you were like, you lit me up, and da-da-da-da. Now, we've got, I think, a really nice conversation. When you check in, if we agree, we agree. If we don't, we don't. And then we move on. I remember when that call was considered to be whack. Am I crazy? Or is this like full-blown whack going on right now?
Well, I don't think I let you off as much as the Catholic Church.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yes.
That is true. You went off on the Catholic Church. As a matter of fact, you commended me. You commended me for my coverage of that and being truthful.
Yes.
But does this craziness seem like it's worse? You blame it on social media and talk radio. I don't care what we blame it on. I just want to know, before we start to point fingers, does it sound like it's gotten crazier?
Yes.
Because it feels
sides.
That way.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, did you hear the guy talking about dead people, dead cops in the street somehow when we're talking about Santa Claus hats? I mean, that's not one and one equals anything.
No, but I think on both sides, it has gotten out of hand to the point where I can't get on social media anymore.
It's a mess.
No, it really is.
All right,
but I'm going to throw you a 30-second curveball. In as much trouble as it appears the president might be in from many fronts, I still struggle to find an opponent, a political opponent, that could defeat him in 2020.
Well, I'm not even sure that the legal problems that most people assume are automatic are automatic. And on top of that, the entire issue about the Democratic field is more convoluted to me than not, although I do think there are two or three that stand out more than others, like Kamala Harris. Let's go out to break.